Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. Today, I sit down with the executive director of the National Education Association Rhode Island, Bob Walsh. And Bob Walsh not only heads up the teachers' union here in Rhode Island, but also a seasoned Politico, a former congressional candidate. So we had a terrific time breaking down Rhode Island politics then, now, and into the future. And by the way, if you're listening to this pod on release day on Friday, Bob and I are both panelists tonight on Rhode Island PBS's weekly political roundtable, A Lively Experiment. So you can watch that at 7 p.m. on television, or I'll share the link on my Twitter account at Bill Bartholomew. Support for the Bartholomew Town Podcast comes from Newport Vineyards, featuring Taproot Brewing Company.
Hi, my name is Kevin Beecham. I'm the head brewer here at Taproot Brewing Company in Middletown, Rhode Island. Started basically home brewing when I was 19 years old in my parents' kitchen, just messing around with different flavor profiles and ingredients. Pretty new to the state of Rhode Island and new to Newport especially, but really love it out here. It's a pretty awesome experience and really great to work with local producers and farmers, and in a small setting like Taproot Brewing where we can do, you know, a lot of customized, unique recipes. So it's been a lot of fun.
Discover more at NewportVineyards.com. All right, so we are here at the Loft, Bob Walsh talking Rhode Island, talking education. Happy New Year, first of all.
Thank you. And Happy New Year to you.
I've been getting back and forth. Some people are saying it's not the new decade, that the Farmer's Almanac stipulates that it's on the, so it'd be 2021, 2031.
That's funny. Technically, mathematically, that's true because there was no year zero. It doesn't really matter, though. You can decide to celebrate any 10-year interval of time that you want.
There it is.
Let's let's hope if we get a good political outcome in November, we can say this was the end of a bad decade and we get to start fresh.
Hey, you know what?
in a year.
It's been something else. I mean, the brand of populism that we saw in this last decade, I mean, that is in my time, that's certainly unprecedented, but looking back in history, I mean, it's a very specific moment where you saw Bernie Sanders have a lot of support, and you saw Donald Trump obviously win the presidency on this notion of the people.
Yeah, I joke that I've been woke since Watergate, but I'm glad that a lot of other people have woken up to how important getting involved is. I was a big Bernie guy in the last campaign. I haven't picked a champion in this one. I just want to win, so I'm
right
watching them all and hoping there's no circular firing squad and we get a nominee who can take this. Obviously, I'd prefer my personal preference is to be as left as we can get elected. The most acceptable electable is the meme that I use on that one.
Right. Well, it will be interesting to see what people define as the Democratic Party going forward. I mean, here in Rhode Island, I made a remark the other day that it's the same party that incorporates Pat Fonts, incorporates, you know, Charlie Lombardi, the same Aaron Regenberg and Dan McKee are both Democrats, and they basically split the vote here in the state. It's really a very interesting time in that regard.
We have the Democratic Party in Rhode Island, which I've been part of most of my life, is a very big tent, and some of it's cultural, traditional. You were born into the Democratic Party like you were born into your religion and your ethnic background in a lot of ways in this state, which means we have a very large tent. And you can approach it in two different ways. You can try and empty the tent and make it small, but you're probably not going to get a lot done. Or you can find your common ground, at least on some issues with folks, and move different agendas forward with different coalitions of folks.
Yeah, I guess that's
try and find the common ground. That's, you know, to get stuff done. Which ultimately is the goal on the political side of things, to
right
make things better for people.
Do you think – I find sometimes that there's – and it's necessary just from a mass media slash – in terms of Rhode Island, from a communications perspective, to come out with you know, for example, the Rhode Island Political Co-op putting forth this tax proposal that is almost never likely to make it through, but it's such an extreme number. I think they're looking at 10% over $600,000.
Yeah, they're pretty much looking at doubling the upper rate. And I think, and we can talk about the co-op if you want. I think from a proposal standpoint, you cannot make two arguments. Well, have someone out there so far out there that anything else looks reasonable below it. But it's hard because it negatively affects the entire dialogue on increasing taxes. I believe that the highest paid Rhode Islanders should pay more in income tax. We cut too deeply. We have a structural deficit. We over-rely on the property tax on the state. The way we're going to have to go on this is income taxes. And in that policy proposal, there is an answer that could help us get through the coming tough times. But they were so far out there, they might have hurt the even the more reasonable sub-ideas or the more achievable sub-ideas get thrown out, baby with the bathwater type thing. And that's frustrating, I think. And as far as the co-op itself, and I like most of the people involved that I know with the co-op, but I think they're hurting the effort. When you're running, and I've used the example, you're running someone against Aaron Lynch Prada, Senator Aaron Lynch Prada, who was instrumental in getting Roe versus Wade codified, something I've been working on my entire political career here. And then saying, well, we want to do better than that. You can't do better than that. And that hurts the entire co-op effort because every one of those other candidates is going to have to answer, aren't you involved in an effort on this? So it's too many candidates, not enough campaign workers type situation. And it's too bad because there's some terrific folks there. And we, you know, in my day job at the National Education Association here in Rhode Island, we'll judge each candidate on their own merits. But I can tell you, some of these folks get elected, they're going to go into a room and try and get something done and say, aren't you the one who gave so-and-so or your colleague who was running gave so-and-so a hard time? So it's not an effective strategy. I was involved with Ocean State Action for its entire existence, and we were a good labor progressive coalition. We got a lot of candidates elected. We got a surtax on the rich passed in the early 1990s when the state was in similarly tough times right after the banking crisis. You know, the key to our electoral success over the years is pick a few candidates, work really hard for them, and make sure that they had a broad base of support. They had a good organization behind them, and we were part of that organization. But you picked your opportunities.
Yeah, the nuances of Rhode Island are so specific. That's the question I've kind of asked everybody the Rhode Island Political Cooperative has been, okay, so you've got voter X, he lives in Ashaway. You've got voter Y, she lives in, you know, East Greenwich. You know, where's the common factor in their life that you can link on a statewide basis that doesn't, you know, necessarily even play into a political idea, but just the idea of pushing back against the institutions?
Right. I agree, Bill. It's really about getting stuff done when you're there. What's the point? Yeah. Well, you get there and you want to get progressive policies enacted. You know, you want someone who's good on the environment, good on labor, good on civil rights issues, good on social justice, understands that a progressive tax policy looks like this and not that, and, you know, kind of hits on all the issues. You get a candidate like that, and you can talk to a broad-based coalition and get a lot of support for a candidate like that. If someone's coming in as a single issue or I just want to throw the people there that are out without any our districts are small. Generally, the elected officials are well-known by the people who are voting for them, or at least they were at the beginning, you know, and the smart ones always stay in touch with the folks that elect them. And I don't know. It's, you know, sometimes I should have done the disclaimer at the beginning. Everything I say could be wrong, but, you know, 40 years of experience in campaigns, and frighteningly, I am marking my 40th year of working on campaigns in Rhode Island, starting on a school committee race in Cumberland in 1980. So
there it is.
Seen where we got the first woman elected to the Cumberland School Committee in history. So I have seen a lot.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see what Republicans do here in the state as well. I feel like they have an opportunity to position themselves also as sort of this, you know, faction against the institutions and drive less policy, you know, but they're not going to, I'm sure.
Again, it's select opportunity. Their chairwoman, Sue Sienke, is saying the right things. Yeah. Target the legislature. Forget about the statewide races. Don't even think about taking on Jack Reed or our congressional delegation. There's no statewide races. They're smart enough to at least say that they're going to focus on defending what they have and trying to expand. But the demographics of the state have shifted. The Connecticut side of the state is getting redder, and that's probably where they'll focus. If they're going to They shouldn't run anyone in Providence. It's a fool's errand. And that's tough to tell a party that they're taking out the largest city, but that's not dissimilar to the rest of the country.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting stuff. Rhode Island politics, I mean, it's like we could have, and we kind of do, I guess, with a moderate party and, you know, sense almost four political parties here. You could have a progressive, or factions anyway, progressive flank, this sort of moderate flank, Democrats / Dino Republicans.
Yeah, it manifests differently when you actually get into the General Assembly, though, because there are always progressives on both sides of the leadership fight, and there are always conservatives on both sides of the leadership fight in both chambers. There are better way for the folks that I agree with to get things done. I think in the fight about the speaker seat last time, and there was no candidate that the opposition was voting for. A lot of people just voted no, which I didn't think was a particularly wise tactic. I think a majority of the folks who were with the speaker and a majority of the folks who were against him were both candidates that we supported in the past. So,
yeah.
So the factions weren't on ideological lines entirely.
Yep.
And it's a tough...
The Reform Caucus often gets confused as a progressive flank.
There are plenty
of moderates in there.
Yeah. It's the toughest jobs in the world are the leadership jobs in our General Assembly. If you're the speaker, you've immediately got 74 people asking you for something. And the big mistake the reform group made is that they took a whole bunch of names off the list of folks who had the right to go in and ask. Oh, you voted against me? Good. You go to the bottom of the list. We're giving committee assignments. The first people I have to pay attention to are the ones who actually voted to support me.
And the speaker even admitted that.
Whatever it is. Whose call is going to get done first? This is what I say about the cooperative. One of their candidates gets elected and goes up there, and they say, well, I'll tell you what, why don't you wait out in the lobby while I deal with all the people who were nice to your now colleagues. And it's a hard – and that's not politics. It's just human nature. You're going to talk to and work with the folks that worked with you. And that doesn't mean change doesn't come. I mean, I've been involved in a lot of Democratic primaries over the years, but there's always a – and that's fine. That's what we do. You pick better candidates when you can, but usually in the basis of very specific issues.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. On Twitter, you'll see, you know, sometimes the vile, the rift between Republicans and Democrats here in the state or whatever it may be, you know, especially during Roe v. Wade codification, Reproductive Privacy Act ultimately. You know, but in the reality, you see people from both parties sometimes – hanging out at lunch, you know what I mean, have a joking conversation. They may have a disagreement on policy, but that human factor, it's not like it is on Twitter or the media tries to portray.
And people, especially folks who are more newly involved, don't get that. They're shocked. How can you be – now, you know, maybe this is why I never succeed on those rare occasions my name's on the ballot. I don't have that killer instinct where I don't vilify folks I disagree with because there's probably some common ground we can find on the next issue. And that's usually the case. I've always been happy to say I've had a good working relationship with Speaker Mattiello. He's a straight shooter with me. If he disagrees with me, if he tells me, if he agrees, he tells me. If he has an open mind, that he's open to persuasion, we'll talk things through. And that's really all you ask for with anyone. And part of the most persuasive thing you can do when you're lobbying in the legislature is say, here's an issue I support, and I have 40 people behind me that are elected officials in your chamber. So we've got a majority support. So how can we make this happen? That's always the best way to get things done. Everyone, whereas Gordon Fox, the prior speaker, who I'm personally fond of, was friends with for a very long time. I was his Democratic state committeeman when I lived in Providence in his district. I'm still puzzled. by how that all played out and what happened with him. And, you know, obviously I wish him well. He's out and back with us, so to speak. And but I was surprised. That should have been. We got a quality passed under his watch, which was phenomenally important. But on a lot of other things, commitments he made never get done.
Mm.
Link Chafee, the one time I colored outside the party lines and helped Link Chafee get elected, he pretty much, his slogan was trust Chafee. I think it was before you were back in the state. And you couldn't. He made three major commitments to my organization, which worked really hard to get him elected. He broke them all, 0-for-3. And so I'm still puzzled by that. So,
right, that's an interesting race because that I feel like there must have been some decision made, union backing somehow to get Chafee.
Oh, yeah. We were very worried. Frank Caprio was a Democratic nominee. Ironically, yeah. We were very worried about his pension proposals and his view of the pension system. And Link made a commitment there would be no changes to the pension system without our oversight, involvement, and approval in advance, knowing that some changes needed to happen. He broke that commitment and also had committed to supporting binding arbitration for public school employees and public workers, and broke that commitment after the Senate passed the bill. And he recognized the problems that we were all having in the education world with then Commissioner Gist, and said he would resolve that. It was Governor Raimondo that fixed that problem for us, not Governor Chafee. And that was 0-for-3. That was an amazing thing.
And now he's running for president again.
Yeah. And hopefully he will not be the reason that we lose a close state. I don't think he'll be the nominee of the Libertarian Party. I think when they look at his record, they'll be puzzled. And again, nice guy. Someone who, when he lived in Rhode Island, you run into him at the supermarket, he'd have a lot of thoughtful things to say. I'm very supportive of his peace first agenda. I think that's important voice in the process, but I don't think he thinks about the political consequences of his actions. So I don't know that it's going to go anywhere.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hey, everybody, getting way out in front on this one, but wanted to let you know, coming up on Saturday, March 21st, Songs and Stories from Bartholomew Town, a full band show with special guests live in Newport, Rhode Island at the Parlor. That's Saturday, March 21st, Songs and Stories from Bartholomew Town. For more information, follow me on Instagram at Bartholomew Town Podcast, and obviously stay tuned to the pod. Okay, back to my conversation with Bob Walsh. Last year you had sort of a legendary debate on Newsmakers with Alan Fung, Cranston Mayor Alan Fung, evergreen contracts, that whole world now that we're in. I mean, just broadly speaking to municipal and educational contracts and how that plays into, there's a lot of talking points out there. I think there's a lot of people who have no idea what the realities are that are.
They certainly don't.
And that's, including myself, because of the amount I've sat here with Mayor Polisena and thought I've heard something that makes perfect sense, you know, with his firefighter background, you know, it seems an objective take, but then you'll hear something totally different from.
Well, the mayor's a friend of mine. He's mad at me right now because he didn't like we call it the continuing contract bill. He calls it the evergreen contract bill, or worse, I suppose. It's really a straightforward issue. We in Rhode Island, public sector workers got collective bargaining in the late 1960s. Police and firefighters, at the culmination of that, had something called binding arbitration, which meant if they didn't have a deal, they submitted their issues to a neutral third party who imposed a deal upon them. And the reason was, well, you'd never wanted a situation where police or fire were on strike. They did not give that to teachers or municipal employees, including education support professionals in the schools. And then for 40-something years, the court-level rule, not in the law, but the way the courts adjudicated it when the question got raised was, well, the existing contract stays in effect until you get a new contract, which is pretty sensible and pretty much what happens in the private sector. And there were strikes. They were not sanctioned by the state, so to speak. There's nothing in the law that says strikes were legal. And the courts would order people back eventually if there was a labor situation. If you didn't go back, you went to jail. If you went back, you kept talking under the guidance of a mediator. And then right around 9/11, literally 2 days after 9/11, a judge said, well, I don't want to hear any of this testimony, just order them back to work, and kind of broke the system. But we still kept contracts in effect. In fact, in that particular instance, a contract in Middletown stayed in effect until the following spring, until the settlement was reached. And then 10 years ago in East Providence, or 11 years ago now, they went through, they answered the unanswered question. What happens if you go in the tight time frames under the law and you don't like the answer in informal, the advisory opinion an arbitrator gives? Because we have arbitration for teachers and municipal employees. It's just advisory on finance and binding on non-financial issues. And in East Providence, they didn't like the answer the arbitrator gave, and they imposed a deal. And the courts upheld their right to do it because the law was silent on it. So what we'd fought for 10 years and finally got passed last year is going back to the practice of 42 years, that you keep talking and you get a deal. We would have preferred binding arbitration like police and firefighters have. We can live with keep talking until you get a deal done. It is not the end of the world. And now, ironically, with Angel Tavares, another former gubernatorial candidate, as their lawyer, 16 of the cities and towns, wisely not Mayor Polesina, who knows, is wise enough, he'd love for them to win, but he's wise enough not to sue the governor, the speaker, and the Senate president. They're suing, and it's going to go nowhere, in my opinion. They, first of all, municipalities are creatures of the state. The U.S. Supreme Court has been very specific in saying you can't bite the hands that feeds you. You don't have standing to
sue. That's a challenge to home rule right there.
Right, right. And then their second argument is, well, we've got a home rule provision in Rhode Island, and we do. And if you read the Rhode Island Constitution, the first line of it, in layman's terms, says, as long as they do the same thing to all cities and towns equally, the legislature still has domain in that area.
So the home
as well.
Rule is to say the state can't come into Westerly and say, boom, you've got to.
Exactly.
Know, to
but if they go into all 39 cities and towns and say, these are the new rules for this.
Gotcha.
And then even if they get through those, then you're in a real contract clause fight. And I spent a lot of years on the pension lawsuit in a contract clause fight that ultimately we settled because we were not going to prevail in the Supreme Court. Now the shoe's on their foot. And even if they got standing to move forward with the case, I do not see. This is not a substantial impairment of contract. This is keeping a contract in effect until a new contract goes into place. And it's a fairly narrow rule because it just keeps the money and benefits in place. You still have the binding nature of arbitration on the non-financial issues. So it's really, I do not expect them to prevail. I think I'm surprised by the cities and town councils who are wasting taxpayer dollars to pursue this. I do not understand at all why they would enter into such a frivolous waste of taxpayer money. And the final question for all of them, especially those that are listening, if you thought you could sue the state of Rhode Island over laws you didn't like, why have you been sitting on your hands for decades? And this is the issue you picked. If you're going to sue them and you have standing, sue about lack of education funding.
Yeah,
sue about inconsistent policies on, you know, on all sorts of things.
Right.
But you can't because you don't have standing to do it.
And of course, I mean, we have the Joe Larissa, Brandon Bell sort of mobile sports betting, that seems like payback for something potentially reproductive health care.
I think they like to go after the state on nuanced things. And I suppose it's important that everything, to be fair about it, we should follow, if we have a set of rules in place, that we should be following them. We over-rely, of course, on we really over-rely on the syntaxes. I was thinking about that this morning. Most people don't know. You hear commentators or callers when you do the shows on the radio say, we have a $10 billion budget. Can't they find? Well, we do and we don't. About $4 billion comes from state-generated revenues.
Right.
All the rest is federal pass-through money, which is why the census is so important, by the way.
Sure, yeah.
And of that $4 billion, a little over $1 billion in income taxes and similar amounts in sales taxes. And if you wanted to lump the next biggest category together, it's the so-called sin taxes.
Yeah.
You add up gambling, alcohol, and tobacco, that's over $500 million in revenue.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the point of such a lawsuit of, you know, that's the nuances of, well, if it's online on your phone gambling versus I wish we didn't need a penny of it. I wish we weren't in the business, frankly.
Yeah.
But we are, and it's our obligation to make sure that the folks who have the addiction problems related to any of those categories get the help they need. And there should be revenues from anything we generate in revenue should have a portion of that revenue for those three categories dedicated to helping the people who can't handle any one of them.
Absolutely. So. 100% agree with that. Last couple of minutes here. 2020 is an election year. Do you expect to see anything substantial in the General Assembly this year? I mean, they've already said cannabis is DOA. You know, I don't know if that's necessarily a priority. I mean, the priority is education, workforce development,
well,
housing,
I think there are some good conversations going on and looking at the funding formula. I think something's going to have to give on the revenue side. I'm a progressive who supported the reduction of the car tax and eventual elimination because I always saw it as the first step towards real property tax reform because, again, this state over-relies on property taxes. We are burying people in property taxes, and it's making them turn against programs they should support, like public education, but something's going to give on the other side. We're going to need more. When, believe it or not, when Ed DePreet was governor, we were approaching the nirvana of 60% state overall state funding for public education. And the banking crisis hit, which is the underreported story 30 years later. And we went the other way. And now we are probably among the worst in the country in state support for public education. So we're going to have to do more. And it's going to have to come from some sort of revenue, and there aren't a lot of tricks left. So.
Yeah. It's. I mean, we've got to move into a new economy, that's for sure, a new model, if you will. At some point, it's got to settle in, whether it's been in a wind, or I should say a blue economy, an industrial economy.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of opportunity here. I mean, we're starting on the wind power track. I mean, we've got we still got a lot of incredibly talented workers. The green infrastructure abilities of this state could be significant. We could be a leader. We could stage a lot of stuff for the entire East Coast out of Quonset. We've got all the folks who are trained in electric boat. I'd much rather have them making windmills and high-speed rail than submarines, in all honesty.
Sure. Same here. No question about it. Last question. Rhode Island today, do you see it as a place that can attract and retain younger people? Or are there just too many gaps at this point to really make that a realistic goal? Do you think, in other words, do you think it should be more about repairing infrastructure, repairing education, et cetera, before really making that push?
I think you have to do everything at the same time. I mean, we want to attract and retain as many. When a zillion years ago when I ran for office, that was the talk. You know, we want our kids and our grandkids to be here. We want them to have real opportunities. And a lot of the types of jobs that they would have gone into when I would give speeches like that are just gone because the economy shifted. But a lot of the new ones can be here. My first job out of college was as a computer programmer, and that was a new and different thing, and there weren't a lot of them. Now it's an everywhere job, and so the economy's going to shift. The manufacturing jobs aren't here, and other than in niche areas, they're really not coming back big time, but there are plenty of other jobs that we can work on in the new economy, and a lot of them can be good for the world, including on the environmentally conscious side of the world. There are a lot of ways to do things. Let's do it the smart way and think about the not only the 10 years, but the 100-year-out scenario.
Definitely. Bob Walsh, NEARI. Look out for him on a lively experiment as well.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Occasionally. Well, thank you, Bill. It was a real pleasure to be here.
Yeah, pleasure's mine. Thanks. And always a pleasure to have you aboard as well. Stay tuned for new episodes every Tuesday and Friday. Until next time, I'm Bill Bartholomew. We'll talk soon.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.